The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Tuesday, August 27th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Lots to talk about today. Yes, college football. Yes, it is week one. And yes, we will get to that later on in the show. But if you have been with us for quite some time, you know that Tuesdays, most of the time, in the first hour is our baseball power hour. So we're going to get to that here in just a second. But joining me in the studio, as he does every Tuesday, the voice of Lee Scott Academy, Christian Griffin. Great to see you. Great call on Friday night. And the Warriors get started with a win, making history in the AHSAA.
They do. Not a bad debut for the AHSAA, winning 33-16 over the Excel Panthers. Got a tough one this Friday coming up, traveling to Lochapoka. So yeah, a nice little 20-minute drive, but still a little road trip for the Warriors.
Your hand is up, Lindsay. Even though I haven't introduced you yet,
go ahead. Time. Would you say that the Excel Panthers had some sort of like formula error?
My call was Microsoft Word, Microsoft PowerPoint, Microsoft Excel, Warriors by 17. So
wow. Okay. Wow.
Does that deserve a little bit of credit?
Is close
that,
enough.
I taught
a little
him well.
Golf clap from him. That's all.
I taught him well. Well, you did hear the voice of Lindsey Crosby, who writes for Braves Today. He writes for Auburn Daily. He does a daily morning baseball podcast. Lindsey, great to see you once again, my friend. Do we have good news to talk about
today? I was going to say, is it good news that we're seeing him again? Because I feel like there's just been a streak of bad news. But we'll let him tell us if there's any good news that's come out of everything.
If I could control the baseball gods and which Braves players they hurt, this would be a much better season than it's been so far. Good news, because the Braves are winning their games. I mean, it's kind of hard to be upset about what's happened recently with this team when you look at the fact that, yeah, they won their homestand against the Phillies, against the Nationals. You know, they are, back of my head, they are 7-3 in their last 10 games, and they're still holding on to a wildcard spot.
They're still giving people hope. That's what they do best. And so we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about the updated standings as, yet again, we're closer and closer to the postseason. I mean, it's the last week of August, people. September is near, which means October is near as well. And so baseball, all of our number one, talking Major League Baseball, talking Atlanta Braves. Any Auburn updates today, Lindsay? Maybe. I'm not too sure. I don't really think so. If we might get to it at the end.
They did start fall workouts, so the players are they're in Plainsman Park. They're hitting, they're throwing, they're taking BP, things like that. But no real progress report. Those aren't open to the public or the media, so not a lot to update as of now. But we're expecting to hear from Butch Thompson sometime in the next probably 2 weeks or so.
Okay, well, we'll have that for you whenever that does eventually happen. So, yeah, talking Major League Baseball, all of our number one. And you can be a part of the show. You can call in at 334-321-1390. You can call in and ask questions if you have a comment, concern, anything you want to talk about in terms of baseball. This is the time to do it. This is the one designated hour of the week that it's pure baseball. We still have baseball hits and segments throughout the week, but this is the one hour where it is pure baseball. Baseball, Braves, Major League, everything else. And so you can call in at 334-321-1390 or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067.
And Lindsay, I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago. It might have even been a month ago, but the Red Sox and Blue Jays with Danny Jansen, a crazy story in how his pinch runner stole a base against him.
Yeah.
Crazy, crazy story.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, back a couple months ago, the Red Sox were playing the Toronto Blue Jays. Danny Jansen, catcher for the Blue Jays, is up to bat in the second inning, 0-1 count. I think he fouled off a cutter, and downpour starts. The game is delayed, the game is suspended, and was set to be made up on Monday. And the only real significant difference for these teams between then and Monday was that Danny Jansen was traded from the Blue Jays to the Red Sox. And so Danny Jansen was batting for the Blue Jays when the game was suspended. So you had to pinch hit for him. The catcher for the Red Sox, Reese McGuire, had been sent down to AAA. And so you had to replace the catcher for the Red Sox. And so Danny Jansen is the first player in MLB history to play for both teams in the same game. He was pinch hit for by Dalton Varsho. And then he checked in behind the plate for the Red Sox. He's in the box score for both teams. We did check. He only gets credit for one game played in MLB's official service time calculation stuff. But he is in as a participant for both the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. First time in history it's happened. And then, like you alluded to, the replacement player for him, the pinch hitter, actually got on base and stole a bag off of him, which is kind of funny.
That's fantastic.
The only thing that would have made that better, I think there's two things that could have made that better, is if one, he could have had a hit for the Blue Jays before he got traded, or two, if he would have had two strikes on him when the game was called. Because the way it works, if you have one strike, then the at-bat transfers to the pinch hitter. If you had two strikes on you and it was a strikeout or whatever, that would have stayed with you. So Danny Jansen could have caught strike three for his own strikeout had he had a second strike. It would have been even better if he dropped the strike three and then had to throw down to first throw himself out.
That's phenomenal.
But I turned it on. I watched that little 5-minute sequence. I turned it right back off and went back with my stuff I was doing. But it was a fun little story.
That's
not
so
the first
great.
Time in baseball that it's happened. First time in the major leagues. It happened in the minors. And the fun fact here was the guy was released by his original organization. And he was signed by the other team. This is like, you know, a month before this game was supposed to be made up. And he actually had already gotten a hit in the first half of that game. So he not only played in both parts of the game, this is in the minor leagues, obviously, but he got hits for both teams in the same game.
That's
the
insane.
One thing he kind of has over Danny Jansen, although there's no footage of it because it's the minors in like the late 80s and nobody cared.
Baseball, I think, is the only sport where just weird things like that can happen because of all of the different factors and all of the different stats and different things like that. So I'm glad you brought that back up. I'd forgotten about that,
that was fun.
Until it happened the other day. And so, that's a crazy story in Major League Baseball. Other crazy stories around Major League Baseball. We're going to get to the Braves in a little bit. But other major, crazy, wild, important stories that the people need to know about. As I mentioned, we are getting closer and closer to the postseason. There's a lot to talk about here with what's going on.
Have we talked enough about Shohei Ohtani?
There's never enough to talk about. Like, there's never talking too much about Shohei.
Yeah. If you kind of missed it over
the
weekend.
Oh, yeah, he made history. Yeah.
Fastest player in MLB history to 40 homers and 40 stolen bases. And the way he did it was a walk-off grand slam for his 40th home run.
Of course it was.
Which, yeah, of course it was. Like, it's just the absolute most, I guess, baseball story, romantic, Hollywood script thing way to do it. Right?
And it's the only way that Shohei could do it. It was on a first-pitch curveball, lefty-lefty. It was a low-and-away curveball, and he pulled it to right center.
And just sent it flying. Yep.
Like, the fact he even hit it's amazing. Never mind hit that pitch for a home run the way that he did. But I think I'm at the point now with Shohei Ohtani where I probably would believe almost anything somebody told me about Shohei Ohtani, right? Like, you could, a time traveler could show up and be like, yeah, this is from the future. Like, hey, Shohei Ohtani hit for the cycle and threw a perfect game in the same game. Yeah, okay, I could see that. You know, Shohei Ohtani had multiple immaculate innings and he hit a home run every time after he did one. Yeah, okay, yeah, probably happened. You know, he threw a no-hitter and he also hit a home run cycle. Yeah, okay, sure. I'm sure he did. Like, I legitimately could believe any story about Shohei Ohtani on the baseball field right now, which is wild because I was not there 3 weeks ago.
And wasn't Shohei throwing a bullpen the other day as well and like a Freddie Freeman
He got on the mound the very next day and threw off the mound for the first time since having Tommy John surgery. Like, I think it was the day after the walk-off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
This well, didn't we have the discussions, Lindsay, about whether he, I mean, how long that he could go of hitting and pitching and then, yeah, of course, having surgery and things like that. I mean, is that an expectation? I mean, so is he going to come back?
Here's what's wild. Earlier in the season, when he was on that ridiculous start, I said, you need to consider the possibility of having Shohei not be a starter because of the extra wear on his body and how good he's been without hitting. We can all agree he's had an amazing year. He's going to be the National League MVP. I don't see him getting chased down, right? It's going to happen. But here's the thing. His stats last year with the Angels, while doing both, are technically still better than what he's done this year. He's batting .292, .378, .615, which leads the National League, with 41 homers, which leads the National League, and 100 runs, which leads the National League. Last year, he batted .304, .412, .654 slug, led all of baseball. 44 homers, led the AL.
It's absurd.
I mean, yes, the team around him is better, so his RBI count's better and his runs are better. But, like, from a pure production standpoint, he did better with the Angels than he's doing with the Dodgers, which tells me, yeah, he absolutely can probably still do both because he did both last year, and he did that at the same time that he was pitching to an ERA of just around 3 in 123 starts and 132 innings.
It's a crazy stat, too, because these past 30 days, whatever Shohei Ohtani you call a quote-unquote slump, I think he's hitting .225 or something like that the past 30 days, and he's still almost hitting .300 at a clip for throughout the entire season. It's funny looking back at it now, the debates of whether or not his $700 million contract was worth it, whether or not, you know, is he going to ever fulfill everything? Is he going to be able to play up to his expectations again, even if he's not a starting pitcher, just what he brings to that lineup? And again, the conversation of, does he need to be a guy that goes out and throws 7 innings every 5 days, or almost throw him in like the World Baseball Classic? Let him be that closer in the 9th inning, somebody that can go in. I mean, tell me a reliever you'd want to face other than Shohei Ohtani with a 5-pitch mix and that splitter in the bottom of the 9th inning.
Well, my thing with Shohei and the massive contract and when all those negotiations and those conversations were happening on, okay, who's going to do it? Or, Lindsay, you and I were talking, would anybody do it? I mean, that was a legitimate conversation of, is he too expensive? Which we've never had that conversation before ever about a professional athlete.
For Juan Soto.
Yeah. I mean, are they too expensive? And it was a legitimate conversation. But I think with Shohei, what the Dodgers, I think, figured out and what a lot of people probably would have was, yes, Shohei Ohtani's really good at baseball, mm-hmm. and he's going to make your team better offensively, defensively, all of those things. But he brings such a entertainment factor, they get their money back from that alone. I feel like now, especially with him still performing at this high of a level, they understood and realized, okay, we'll take the gamble and expect to get this back in entertainment value and television, radio, ticket, merch, all the stuff that goes into that. And then the bonus, which is crazy, is, oh, he's still really good at baseball.
Yeah, we don't have hard and fast numbers as far as exactly how much extra the Dodgers are making off of all of their endorsement deals, but it feels like every couple weeks we hear about another marketing partnership in Asia, on the Pacific Rim, another broadcast agreement where he's probably the only player in baseball that can legitimately move the needle from a sponsorship, from an advertising dollar perspective. And so the way the contract is structured, and just to kind of real quick on deferred money. So $68 million is deferred. They pay him $2 million in cash every year. $68 million is deferred. You have until the summer a year after to actually pay that. So if he earned a salary in 24, you have until July 1st of 2026 to pay that $68 million into an account for Shohei. They are going to, it is estimated that they are going to be making $68 million in additional revenue off of the advertising and broadcast deals related to Shohei by that time when they have to start paying that salary in there.
Jeez.
Meaning they're getting Shohei Ohtani for $2 million a year, which, you know, the Dodgers, I'm glad the Dodgers got a break like that because needed some sort of help with payroll and
right.
funding some stuff here. Mm. But, I mean, it's, in retrospect, it's absolutely completely worked out. And you have to think if there were more teams who were confident in their ability to do all of those sales to collect that money, how many more teams would have stepped up to try to get Shohei beside what we expected to kind of be the big three of Toronto and Los Angeles, and I think it was it the Mets or the Yankees?
Yeah.
Besides that big three, who else would have really been in the running for that had they known they could have sold all those sponsorships as well?
You talk about all the international hype that Shohei Ohtani gets, obviously being from Japan. The Dodgers and the Cubs open up in the Tokyo Dome to start the 2025 season. That could be the biggest international baseball event ever, other than, I mean, maybe an Ichiro type of deal where it was just absolutely ballistic. I mean, the Tokyo Dome is amazing in itself.
And I can't believe I'm giving credit to MLB on this, but the choice to go with the Cubs along with that
was a great choice.
Because the Cubs have Shota Imanaga, the Cubs have Seiya Suzuki. They have also put in a lot of organizational resources into Japan. It's not just signing those two players, but they actually have an international scouting office out there. Like, they've put their money where their mouth is on trying to grow the game and build their own presence out there. I'd say they're probably second or third in baseball behind the Dodgers as far as work, and maybe the Mariners with their history with Ichiro to try to build that presence out there. So that was a really smart idea by MLB. Again, I can't believe I'm giving them credit for something. You know, when the worst person in the world has a great point, like, it's that kind of thing.
Does Manfred actually want to have fun?
I don't know. Let's not assume
somebody else did this.
There we go.
Not him.
Let me add one more thing before we get to break. Yeah. I think, too, with Shohei, there were a very select few organizations that could pay that sort of money and make that sort of money on him.
Yeah.
If he goes to, I mean, the Rockies, they're not going to make that type of money. But Los Angeles, New York, Boston, I think, would be in there. Chicago would be in there. Like, those types of – the Braves, I think, are in that conversation of some of the biggest names in the sport could make that sort of money on them in terms of media deals and broadcasting and things like that. But there's a lot of organizations, even if they could find the money to pay for him, they don't have the brand recognition to make it all back from Shohei Ohtani, which is why I think him going to the Dodgers was just – a picture perfect situation.
Like, inevitable.
For them.
At some point,
I mean, it made sense.
There's such a teardrop between the Dodgers and even those other teams that you mentioned, Atlanta, Chicago. Such a market drop, such a face value drop. And so, yeah, I felt like the Dodgers run was almost inevitable.
All right, 334-321-1390. We're off and running here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. This is our Baseball Power Hour. Got a couple of texts in the text box we'll get to. Phone lines are open as well. You can be a part of it. We'll have more here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on with our Baseball Power Hour here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins. With me on Tuesdays is Christian Griffin and also Lindsey Crosby here in hour number one. Plug it all. Tell the people where to find you, because I say it every time, I can't keep up.
I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. It's kind of the hub for everything, but the Atlanta Braves writing, bravestoday.com. I'm their beat writer covering the Atlanta Braves. The Auburn baseball writing, auburndaily.com. We have a daily Major League Baseball podcast called First Pitch, available at firstpitchpodcast.com and wherever you get your podcasts. It's tons of stuff going on, tons of content. And then obviously I'm here and a bunch of other radio things throughout the week, just talking ball.
Well, we're going to get to the Atlanta Braves coming up after our bottom of the hour break. Want to have plenty of time to talk about them and what they did last weekend, what they have coming up this weekend. I mean, there's a lot going on with the Braves, but I had a question. Okay. In the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067, John and Auburn asks, if Shohei is a reliever, do the Dodgers lose their DH still if he gets pulled from the game?
So this is a fun question. Okay. The old rules, yes. MLB specifically changed the rule where if your DH is also working as a position player, in this case pitching, when the pitcher comes out, you do not lose the DH. In Shohei Ohtani's earlier seasons, there were a couple times where he would have to go spend an inning in the outfield because they wanted to keep his bat in there for one more at bat. So MLB changed the rule for him. So if he was the closer let's say you brought him in for the eighth and the ninth, he could still be in the DH spot. In essence, what they do is on game day, he functions as two separate players. He functions as Shohei the pitcher and Shohei the DH. The only thing that happens if you remove him from the DH spot, if you pinch hit for him or pinch run, which you never would do, but if you were to do that, he could not come back as DH,
right.
But he could still enter the game as a pitcher. So, but MLB has separated him as, in essence, two separate people on game day, which is different from how fantasy baseball treats him. Fantasy baseball, if you've ever had him, it's one, it's fun. But they make you pick, do you have Shohei Ohtani the pitcher in your lineup today? Or do you have Shohei Ohtani the hitter in your lineup today? And last year, I had a situation where I had to make a decision in a doubleheader. And I said, give me Shohei the pitcher. And Shohei the pitcher got rained out in the second game, but he hit two home runs in the first game, and I didn't get credit for those.
Oh,
that's how I know that rule is different in fantasy.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
Can we also take a minute just about what you said? You said the MLB changed the rule for him.
Yes,
because he's
the Shohei Ohtani rule. There's never been another player that has done, I mean, anything like that, to where you specifically go and MLB is like, we need to change our rule book.
Because this has never happened.
There's never been a player as good as him where it kind of pressed the issue and you had to do it because this guy's so amazing, we have to find ways to keep him in the game. You've made rules for individual players. Off the top of my head, there's two real quick. Buster Posey, the rule about you can no longer run over catchers is commonly called the Buster Posey rule because he got his ankle broken in that situation when he was with the Giants.
Back when baseball was a real game, Lindsay. Back when baseball was played for real.
Back where men were men. You didn't have to touch the bag at second base on a double play.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. And then Pat Venditti, the ambidextrous pitcher, where they made a rule when a switch hitter and a switch pitcher faced off, the pitcher had to decide first what he was going to throw. Because we had a situation where the switch hitter changed sides, so the pitcher changed
pitcher
sides.
Would just step off and switch his glove.
And they just went back and forth, and the umpires were like, stop, we got to do something. We got to figure this out. And
I haven't thought about that in years.
So they put in a rule. That was the rule, was the pitcher has to decide first. And once he decides, the switch hitter can then decide. And college baseball adopted that same rule.
Okay, I didn't know that.
For Gerangelo Sintahe with the Mississippi State last couple years, he was a first-round pick. And so now he will be in the minors playing under that same rule.
How about that? It's those types of situations where it's like, oh, we've never had this situation before. Guess we got to make a rule. And it seems, it happens in every sport. But, yeah, with Shohei, it's just so unique.
That, and then with somebody like that guy, can he be someone that goes out and throws the Monday starting game and then also the Tuesday game? Or would it be one of those deals to where you would use him strategically and you would throw 47 pitches with the right arm and 52 with the left, just depending on the batter?
As I remember what Mississippi State did, I briefly talked to Chris Lemonis about this when they came to Auburn last time. What he did here is he has to warm them up separately. So, but he would switch from them throughout the game. He would go to lefty as they need to. And he said his stamina is probably a little bit better than a normal pitcher, but it's kind of an overall body fatigue thing more so than it is specifically your arm being tired.
Right.
So like, if your pitch limit would normally be 100 pitches, you might get 110 out of him, provided that, you know, 30% of them were with the left side. He was better from the right. And I think in Major League Baseball, he's going to be mostly a right-handed pitcher. But you had a little bit of flexibility as far as you could get 30 or so pitches and get an extra 10 or so, 15 pitches out of him from the other side. But MLB definitely wants him as a righty. I don't think there's a ton of plans for him to pitch both ways. That's more of a, hey, if he has a sore shoulder, maybe we just let him pitch lefty in this bullpen or something or whatever to keep him on schedule. But I don't think they're going to use him both ways in the majors. The stuff is a little bit like, it's a different arsenal and different velocities.
Yeah.
And it's just not as good from the left-hand side.
I got you. It'd be like one of those rare situations of Kyle Schwarber coming up and it's like, we want to face him lefty-lefty. But
yeah, like this dude is awful against lefties.
Right.
So we know your fastball's four ticks slower. But
just the
this
arm
dude
angle
cannot
of,
hit right. a lefty, so throw it lefty here.
As a broadcaster, that would throw me off so bad. It's like, all right, here he goes, pitching right. Oh, okay, now he's pitching.
Or I feel like you'd love to describe it. It'd be tons of fun to describe it.
What you think a front door curveball would be, depending on which arm he's throwing for.
Brutal. Oh, that's a nightmare. Yeah. Well, hopefully there's no high schoolers around here that are trying to do that in high school baseball. All right, we're halfway through hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We're talking the Braves and the NL East and all of the current standings around Major League Baseball as our Baseball Power Hour continues on ESPN.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
All right, 30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goetz. We got Christian Griffin in here with us and Lindsey Crosby with our Baseball Power Hour joining us for all of hour number one. You can be a part of the show. Comments or questions, 334-321-1390, which is where we go right now. Terry, you have a baseball question for Lindsey Crosby.
Yeah, how y'all doing today, guys?
Doing good, hey, Terry.
Great. Lindsey, do the Astros just keep plugging along or what? I mean, it seems like there's a guy leaving their lineup every year, and they just keep plugging along.
On my podcast, I said the Astros are inevitable. I don't know what it is about this team, but they somehow seem to always find a way. And I am a believer that having the institutional knowledge of winning and going on deep postseason runs helps. But we've seen they let Carlos Correa walk, you know, to the point. They let Correa walk. Like, they've let the different guys just leave, and they still somehow find a way to win. I do think this offseason will be interesting because you've got to decide what to do with Alex Bregman. That'll be interesting. He's no longer an amazing power hitter, but still somebody where you have to decide, do we want to keep him, do we not? But there's just something about this team. They've done a really good job, international free agency, of getting quality pitching. If you look at their rotation, you know, when they had Framber Valdez, Ronel Blanco, just like Christian Javier, all these guys that were international free agents, they do really good with that. They've supplemented that with some really good draft picks like Hunter Brown. They brought back Justin Verlander. But it's all kind of when you have Altuve and you have Yordan Alvarez and you have Kyle Tucker, like that is a really, really talented core. And Tucker and Alvarez are 27 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and when you can hit well, they had a decision to make about two catchers. They kept Yonier Diaz over, you know, over the other option. Diaz absolutely worked out. He's batting 300 at the catching position right now, 16 homers. It's a flawed team. First base has been a disaster for them still. But somehow, they just keep finding enough guys. The thing that I worry about, though, if it's going to fall off, it's going to be because new general manager Dana Brown doesn't quite make the right decisions. A lot of that team, we talked about this at the trade deadline, a lot of that team was not built by Dana Brown. It was built by former general managers, in this case James Click, who is now gone and in Toronto. And so how they approached that last draft was a little bit different. How they approach free agency this year, I think it's going to be really interesting. I think they have to go ahead and get Kyle Tucker extended while it's cheap to do right now. But I'm curious what's going to happen with Bregman this year and then how they kind of deal with their pitching going forward. They loaded up on the bullpen with Hader versus re-signing their three guys. And we've seen some situations. Hader had to throw two innings last night because they were out of high-leverage bullpen arms. He gave up a walk-off to the Phillies. So not a perfect team, but I've been saying they're inevitable because this team just knows how to win and the rest of that division is not good.
Now, with that said, would the new general manager be more active in free agency than guys of the past?
See, I think that's the question, is how does Dana Brown approach free agency? I think that's the big thing we don't really know about yet. Because a guy's first free agency, you can't really read too much into it because they're still new to the organization.
Right.
But Dana Brown came from Atlanta, and Atlanta has never really been super active in free agency under Alex Anthopoulos and while Dana Brown was here. So right. I think there's some belief that if they let Bregman walk, they're going to have to go out and make some sort of corner infield move. Maybe it's third, maybe it's first. They're going to have to do something if Bregman walks. But if they re-sign Bregman, one, do they have the money and the wherewithal from ownership to spend more? But then two, just what does Dana Brown try to do? Does he pull the Atlanta route of, we're going to go take on a bad contract to get a young player? Are we going to go find guys in bad situations and buy low? Or is he going to go out and spend a bunch of money? Because you do have some young, talented players to build around, like a Jeremy Pena. He's batting 274. Like, he was MVP of, I think, the World Series. And so you've got the pieces. Do you supplement in free agency like a lot of teams do, or do you try to be more sustainable with it, promote from within, make trades and things like that? That's the big unknown, but I think we'll know that we'll find out this offseason.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a team do a better job of losing a guy and replacing him with somebody just as good or maybe even better.
Carlos Correa, Jeremy Pena was the big. That's where I became a believer in what Houston was doing, because I didn't think.
Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Terry. I was just to that point. It didn't make sense to me. Shortstops are so hard to replace in baseball, and I want to say half of the nine-figure deals that have been given out in the last four off seasons have been shortstops. Like, it's if you think about all of the big money deals, we had that off season where you saw Dansby sign, you saw Xander Bogaerts sign, you saw all those guys go. To let a shortstop like Carlos Correa walk and replace him with Jeremy Pena, like, it worked out, but it was just surprising to see. And I think out of that, that's where we are now is, okay, does Dana Brown, like, do they have more tricks like that for third base, or are they going to have to go outside the organization?
Well, that leads us, and Terry, we appreciate the call. It leads us into the conversation about all the division leaders, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at the Astros as the division leader of the AL West. They have five fewer wins than the next leading team in a division race. Like, they have 70 wins compared to the Brewers with 75, compared to the Guardians with 75. Then you start getting a 78, 77, flirting with 80. I mean, the Astros are the team with the least amount of wins who have a division lead. So I do think some of it is, yes, their division, but 70 wins at this point in the season is nothing to complain about.
It feels like they have even more of a cushion, though, because, I mean, the Rangers are in third place, 10 back, and then, I mean, the Seattle Mariners, who are on the downslide of the roller coaster. They're 3.5 back, but it feels like they have even more of a cushion.
The Mariners had a 10-game lead in this division. The Mariners were up by 10 games this year, and they blew it. At one point in time, the Astros, on April 27th, the Astros were 8-19, and they were 7 games back in this division. I think the highest they ever got was they got swept by the Yankees, and they dropped to like 8.5 or 9 games back. And since then, they've been on a tear. So they didn't have a great start. They were like 13-24. You know, they didn't get above 500. I believe it was until sometime over the summer, like maybe it was like the end of June, is when they finally broke 500, but they've just been making a climb. And, you know, they ripped off that 7-game winning streak in late June to kind of get over 500. And since then, they've been just consistently winning series. They had another like 8-game win streak that was snapped in mid August, but the Astros were inevitable. And it's nobody in that division has stepped up and said, we want to do it. Fun fact, Bruce Bochy has never taken a team that made the World Series and put them in the playoffs the next season.
Interesting.
Yes.
Didn't know that.
The Texas Rangers are not going to make the postseason this year. And that's a team that won the World Series last year. And they're going to go from that to not making the postseason.
Speaking of divisions, let's talk about the NL East, shall we?
Okay.
Let's talk about the Atlanta Braves, who are 71-60 right now. And what was the deficit last week when you were in here? Was it still 7? Were they 7 games back a week ago when you were in here? And now it is 6. So, in the last week, they've made up 1 game, Lindsay. But it feels maybe better than that.
They won 2 out of 3 over Philly. That was the 1 game right there. And I think that's kind of where we are. And I've been pretty consistent on this. They've got 4 games against Philly this week. And so this Twins series is really just kind of your tune-up for that. But what happened last night, I think, can significantly impact that 4-game series in Philly this week. Because Max Fried comes back out after the rain delay. 86 minutes. He had pitched 1 inning. He comes back out, ends up going 5, absolutely saves the bullpen. You don't have another off day until after that series is done. And so, like until next Monday, on the holiday, actually. They're off on the holiday. So I'm guessing a cookout at Truist Park. But Fried being able to come back out, getting through 5 innings, was big to save the bullpen. And now it's get through these next 2 games against Minnesota. You need to win at least 1, you know, win the series, but get through these without burning out any of your high leverage guys so that you have everybody available for the 4-game series in Philly this weekend.
do you, and we'll get to this in just a second, but I mean, we're kind of back to the same conversation we had a week ago, was this is a make or break series. I mean, this is a situation, right? And I think, Christian, you'd agree with this, where the Braves, you've got to go in and get some wins. You can't afford, obviously, to get swept, but
right.
Even going 1-3, like, that's not going to get it done. Even splitting the series may not be enough. I mean, you have to make up ground again this weekend, but unfortunately, it's in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Now, if you go 1-3, the good side of that, I guess, if there is a positive to that, is that you will have the tiebreaker over Philly. Atlanta has tiebreakers almost everybody ahead of them in the standings. They've got it over Arizona for winning the season series. I think they have it over the Padres. I'm not sure there. But they're 6-3 against Philly this year. If they can win one more game, they will have the series, the season tiebreaker, and then they'll have to make it up other places.
If a
tie does occur, which came up in 22, Braves caught the Mets. They were tied at the end of the year, but the Braves had the tiebreaker, so they won the division.
Right.
You obviously don't want that to happen. You want them to just go ahead and beat them outright. But this is something where every series matters. You can't lose a series, and you need to go 3-1 in Philly if you still want to catch them for the division. I think you can afford a split if you're just looking at, let's just get to the postseason, let's just keep a wild card spot, because right now, you know, you are 3 games up on the Mets still. You still have a series against the Mets, but the Mets are in Arizona right now. Arizona's leading the wild card. They've got one of the best offenses in baseball. The only team to score over 700 runs right now is the Arizona Diamondbacks, despite all their injuries. And so you have the ability to not win that series in Philly and still make the postseason. But if you want to win the division, you have to win that series.
And it's frustrating, too, because I'm somebody that is very much intact with the Braves schedule and even like the Philly schedule, but I don't necessarily look at the Philly score night in and night out. But when it comes down to the wire like this, that walk-off that they had against Houston last night just hurts a little bit more. Yep. Just because, again, that would have been another game. It would have made it to 5.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the upcoming Philly schedule, the Phillies don't get Sale either, which is a big loss. We talked about that, how mm-hmm. the decision to not move him up or decision to not make any changes, it looks like it's going to go Morton, Lopez, Fried, and Schwellenbach in that 4-game series.
Is that consistent? Is that what we expect?
That is pretty much what we expect, barring some sort of surprise announcement tonight from Atlanta that they're putting in somebody else in place of Sale tomorrow. I will say, though, and I wrote this up after the Braves series finished against Philly, Philadelphia has been awful against non-fastballs this year, in the second half. And Atlanta made a specific point to not throw them fastballs in that series. The lowest, and like Schwellenbach start, game three, perfect example. The two lowest fastball usages in a game for him this season are his two starts against Philadelphia. And so,
how about that?
When you get that group of guys, you get those four starters where Charlie Morton, primarily a curveball guy. He throws his curveball more than his fastball. It's one of the best in baseball. Lopez is still fastball slider. He throws a curveball some too. Fried's known for that curveball. Schwellenbach, just like Fried, has 6 pitches. He's got some good breaking stuff.
Compared to
Chris Sale, where he's fastball slider.
Yep.
And it's a different visual look. Philly's only seen it one time all year, but it's not the same type of, you're going for the swing and miss. And it's not the same type of approach with Chris Sale. You're attacking them with a fastball to trick them with a slider. This is, in that series, Atlanta specifically was just not throwing fastballs. And actually, I think Schwellenbach, the 3 hits he allowed were all on either fastballs or cutters. Like, the times he did not stick with the plan is when Philly actually scored runs. So maybe it's not a terrible thing to have this 4 in the rotation against Philly, knowing that if you see them in the postseason, they won't have seen Chris Sale since April.
Yeah.
And he's just a hard dude to face no matter what. But also having not seen him in 5 months maybe helps you a little bit, knowing that you can throw a Fried and a Schwellenbach and just spam them to death with curveballs after that. Even when they went to the bullpen in that Schwellenbach game, they went to Pierce Johnson. First batter he got out to end the bases loaded inning, 4 straight curveballs, inning over. Mm-hmm. I mean,
You mentioned the Schwellenbach start where the Braves won 3-2 in that finale. Also, Raisel Iglesias went 3-up, 3-down, striking out the side, and he used that changeup that he doesn't throw too much of, and he doesn't feel as confident on the control. I feel like that's the one pitch is very hit or miss. But, again, that speaks for itself. The one inning, three strikeouts, going to that off-speed, getting those guys out in front. What a pitching duel it could be on, I mean, the entire series, but even – that Saturday, Sunday, Fried and Zach Wheeler, and then Schwellenbach and Aaron Nola. That Sunday game is going to be on ESPN at 6 o'clock. I mean, that is a primetime game, and you expect that to be one of those. I mean, you put one or two runs on the board, you almost feel confident that you can walk away with a win.
That entire series that Atlanta played, that they played against Philly, all of those games were, you know, 3-2, 3-1, 4-2. They were low scoring. Matter of fact, that entire homestand for Atlanta was just incredibly low scoring, and they went 6-2, and that's kind of the model right now. It's the margin for error is a little bit lower on that, but like, they didn't score more than three runs in any game against Philly, and they won 2 out of 3.
What a wild concept it is that the Braves could be going into a series, the most important one of the year, and Chris Sale is not a part of the strategy, but that's by design. Think about that for a second. That's where baseball is won and lost right there. That's what,
love it.
It's what makes the Braves.
The chess match.
Yeah, it's what makes them a World Series organization, man. It's what makes them champs. And that is just unbelievable to think about. Okay, we got to get to our final break here in hour number one. We'll wrap up our baseball power hour with Lindsey Crosby when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Couple of more minutes in hour number one, which means only a couple more minutes with Lindsey Crosby. Boo. That's okay.
But I do have some fun stuff about tonight's matchup, though. Oh. I spent some time researching this today.
Wow. Look, a company man. Company man for this free radio bit that you do.
Yes. Okay, so Spencer Schwellenbach pitching for the Braves versus Simeon Woods Richardson. Schwellenbach obviously has his full last name on his jersey. Simeon has Woods Richardson on his jersey with the hyphen in the middle. Together, it is 29 characters between the two of them for their last names on their jerseys. It's both complete semicircles. From the research that I have done, this is the longest pitcher last name pitching matchup in modern baseball history. That's the only kind of thing that I care about. But I've been wondering for like 2 days, and I was like waiting to see if like Sarah Lang's MLB.com or somebody would do it. Nobody, so I'm like, fine, I'll do it.
That's why they pay you the big
so
bucks.
So I went some amount of bucks.
Yeah. I was wondering too, because you said you did research, and I was like, I thought you just knew everything. So no,
I went in and looked
the,
up
the questions that matter.
You know, the pitchers with the longest last names, confirmed that it was in fact on the jersey, and then looked up like the matchups to see like against other guys with super long names. Like, if you have a 13-character or longer name and you're a pitcher in the last 30 years, I probably looked at your game log today.
So if you're out there and you just happen to be listening to this radio show right now, just know, Lindsey Crosby did the research.
William Van Landingham, if you're listening right now, I looked you up. John Van Berskoten of the Pirates.
What a last name.
Shout out, that's awesome. Shout out Daryl Dapperich.
Daryl Dapperich, Double D, our man.
Yep.
That's phenomenal.
I looked that one up too. Yeah,
like phenomenal.
Just trying to see, am I missing something here or not?
Okay, well, between now and next Tuesday, Lindsey, when we have you back in here for another Baseball Power Hour, the Braves have that all-important series this weekend. I asked you this last week. We'll ask you this again in just a couple of minutes that we have. Other than the obvious best-case scenario, worst-case scenario, sweep or get swept, what do the Braves have to do? What has to happen this weekend? Between now and next week when we talk to you, what needs to happen?
You've got 6 games. I'm going to say Atlanta needs to go 4-2 in those 6 games. Okay. I don't know the exact splits of those. Ideally, you want 3 of those wins to be against Philly. But I think Atlanta needs to go 4-2 in those 6 games.
I was going
to
say, I'll take 0-2 against Minnesota if we can win. If we can win all 4 against the Phillies.
If we can 0-2 the Twins and sweep Philly, that's fine with me too. Doesn't bother me, especially with Philly having a chance at losing because they face Houston in the next 2 days. Which, speaking of, that matchup, Aaron Nola versus Justin Verlander, that's a fun matchup that we may never see again because Verlander's old.
But, he is old.
But that is a fun matchup. 4-2 for Atlanta is what they need to do in the next 6 games.
A follow-up question for that 4-2 to happen. We talked about it last time. It was which starting pitcher needs to be the best for the Braves. Flipping it, now on the offensive side, who is the guy that you have to have step up for the Braves offense, whether it's Marcell Ozuna, whether it's Matt Olson, who had a great night last night? What position player or what guy in that batting lineup is going to have to prevail and come out of a slump possibly in those games in Philadelphia for the Braves to come out?
It has to be Matt Olson. He only has three multi-hit games since June 16th.
Wow.
And two of them have been in the last week. It's got to be Matt Olson. Matt Olson has to be the one. Given where he's batting fourth. You've seen with Whit Merrifield going 5-for-5 and having an on base. It's pretty decent since he joined the Braves. Jorge Soler's back. You got to get guys on base. He's got to drive them in.
All right, there you go. And hey, by the way, the Saturday night game, Braves in Philadelphia. We'll have that for you right here on ESPN 106.7. So if you're looking to listen to that on Saturday night, you can tune in ESPN 106.7 and ESPNAU.com. Lindsay, as always, my man, it's so much fun having you in for our Baseball Power Hour. We'll do it again next week, huh?
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Lindsay Crosby, check him out on X at Crosby Baseball, Braves Today, Auburn Daily, all the things that he does for baseball around professional and college. And, of course, joining us in the studio each and every week. Coming up in hour two, lots of college football things. We got to get you ready for week one. We have that for you coming up next.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you missed a good one, as you always do. It was Lindsay Crosby from Braves Today, Auburn Daily. All of his wonderful baseball coverages and outlets and things. And he joins us every Tuesday for our Baseball Power Hour. And man, it was a good one today because we talked about the biggest storylines around Major League Baseball, including Shohei Ohtani, who is always fun to talk about because there's a chance that he's going to go down as the best player to ever play Major League Baseball. So talked a lot about him. Also talked a lot about the Atlanta Braves and division standings and how the Braves did what they had to do last weekend. But the big question is, can they do it this weekend against Philadelphia? So that was all back in hour number one. If you missed it, you can go and listen to the podcast. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Here in hour number two, talking college football, we're going to continue to talk about Hugh Freeze opening up the week with his press conference yesterday, get some of Christian's thoughts on what he had to say, looking at the depth chart a little bit more as well. Uncle T-Bone and I started to get into that yesterday. Would love to do some more of that here in hour number two, and then just starting to look forward to week one. I mean, looking at what week one poses, because we have games starting on Thursday night, and so all of that and more here in hour number two. You can get in on the show, 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number. Call in and be a part of the show, be on the line, or you can shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. Want to remind you, though, that hour number two each and every day during On the Line is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the 3 to 4 o'clock hour each and every day here on ESPN. A couple of other things that we need to get to, some business things to handle before before we get into some more content. Supposed to do this on Mondays, and somebody forgot. That was me. We're going to do and highlight our high school player of the week, which is also brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. And so we once again appreciate them for everything that they do. This week's Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week. You're going to hear the promo running as well here on ESPN. But it's Auburn High School football's Omar Mapson. The junior running back racked up 118 all-purpose yards on Friday night with four rushing touchdowns in the first half against North Miami Beach to help lead the Tigers to a 49-0 win. Omar Mapson is your Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week, and you can check them out online at theorthoclinic.com. All right, so now that we got all that done, Christian, you were not here yesterday, of course, so your first time getting on the air this week to talk about week one of college football with it being here. We are, according to John and Auburn, we are now at 2:30. We were 100 hours away from kickoff. 100 hours away from kickoff is what John and Auburn told us a little bit ago. How does that feel?
I love it. I love it. Just the fact that college football is back. I'd be lying if I said that I didn't buy the Spectrum Plus or whatever membership to watch Hawaii last Saturday night, because I 100% did.
Yeah.
Did I fall asleep in the third quarter? Maybe. But did I watch the game that started at 10:59 Central Time?
That ended up being a pretty decent game.
It did. It did. They were what? It was Hawaii that was plus 40 or something?
No, and Hawaii was minus 40. They were favored.
Or minus 40. Sorry. Yeah, minus
Hawaii
40.
Was
but
favored
Delaware
by 40.
State made it a game going into the fourth quarter. Hawaii pulled away towards the end, but, but Delaware State, nice little covers job over the Rainbow Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, it was believe it or not, though, that was the only game in week zero. I said this yesterday. The only game out of the four that was not a one-possession game. The other three were all within one touchdown.
Yeah, and I guarantee I wasn't able to listen yesterday, but I guarantee that Uncle Tebow didn't have anything negative to say about Florida State, right?
Oh, no. He was very positive.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought so. Yeah. I figured that, especially based off of how last year ended and then moving into this year with how, you know, they heard about the tens of thousands of fans that were in Ireland and how they booed Kirk Herbstreit the entire time.
I'm he didn't sure bring that up either, no.
No, that's what I'm saying. So I'm sure that DJ Uiagalelei was praised by Uncle Tebow and said that he did an absolutely amazing
job. Oh, I didn't have anything bad to say about DJ.
Right, because it's not like he's done exactly what he was has done his entire career, right?
Right. No, and the Kirk Herbstreit thing, T-Bone has a lot of respect for Kirk Herbstreit and really enjoys talking about him and listening to him.
Yes.
And really respects his decision and his love for Ohio State and Alabama. So,
there we go.
Yeah, it was a really peaceful segment.
I was going to say, I'm sure that nobody got riled up. Nobody nobody called in with anything. And so I'm just glad that I can be the first one to ruffle some feathers here this week.
Well, I'm glad that week zero is behind us and that we are in week one, because there's so much to talk about and get into with all the different games and all the different scenarios. And as I said, we have college football in week one that begins on Thursday and runs all the way through Monday, which is insane to think about. That's what they've done with week one. It's no surprise, but that's just what they've done. And you have SEC football on Thursday night. Probably won't be good SEC football, but they play on Thursday night.
But guess what? It will be on.
Yep.
And that is the biggest thing. It's football everywhere, because aren't there Thursday and Friday NFL games as well?
That'll
or would
be
that be the
next
following
week?
The
yep,
following
that's
week.
Next
okay. Because I was going to say, I'm used to having that one week of college football, then the Thursday night game. But
which I have a bone to pick with that, too. Why are we playing NFL? Why did they do the same thing?
Yeah.
And you know what really makes me mad is the fact that my Green Bay Packers play next Friday night to open the season. Yeah. Oh, just by the way, that just happens to be the Auburn-Opelika game where I'm on the air for Collin High School football. So, you know, it's fine. I'm not mad about it at all.
I wouldn't be either. No, I mean, you should have known ahead of time that NFL always schedules the Friday slate games, so
I should have known it was going to be the Packers.
I mean, exactly. You
Packers
said it.
Packers in Philadelphia, Friday night, September 6th on Peacock. That's gross. That's
it
disgusting.
It's a very gross game.
Game on Thursday, game on Friday, and then all the rest of the games on Sunday. Is there? What are we doing? What are we doing?
You mentioned SEC play starting out. Missouri taking on Murray State, our favorite fan base.
Yeah.
Our favorite fan base.
Shout out
Murray State. That's what a fantastic Twitter follow that it has become between Murray State and Auburn from a couple years back. Was it March Madness, or was it like the Ja Morant season when everything was happening?
That I think all of a sudden, I think it was the
Or was
tournament.
The Jabari Smith year or whatever where They started using the Peacocks. That's what it is. They started using the Peacocks, and that was how Auburn basketball took over. So our great friends up at Murray State, UCF takes on New Hampshire. Now, that's not a very big game, but did you see the new UCF jerseys that dropped? I believe they called them the Dark Knight or something like that. They're all black uniforms.
Oh,
and
okay.
UCF, I feel like, throws out a different jersey concept just about every single week.
Which is crazy because they don't have the colors to do it like Oregon does, right? They don't have the bright, cool-looking color scheme to pull off, I feel like, the different jersey combinations. But they always have, you're right, they always have, like, interesting jersey designs and things like that. I have not seen it, though, so I can't. Okay, you're going to show me here? All right, let's see. As he turns his laptop around. Ooh, okay. It's kind of plain, but it gets the job done. I mean, pure black with the gold numbers and stuff and the kind of like the gold stripe going through the middle of the helmet. I can get behind it. I can get behind it. Attaboy, Gus. Whatever it takes, man. Whatever it takes to get the boys up, I guess.
I mean, yeah, whatever works.
Whatever works. Yeah, so you mentioned, week one on Thursday. You have a couple of ranked teams that are playing on Thursday night. You have NC State, the number 24 team in the country. They are going to be playing. How about number 22, Kansas? They open up the season as well. And Jacob Hillman told us about this a couple of weeks ago during his Monday interview. And T-Bone has jumped all over Kansas. He's riding high on the Jayhawks. He thinks Kansas is underrated and could be a sneaky playoff team for 2024, the Kansas Jayhawks.
I've talked about it as well.
Yeah,
Jaden Daniels and Devin Neal, I think, are top three, and I feel like you could even go top two, or the best quarterback running back duo in college football. I think the two of them, not even talking about what happens on NCAA 25, where they're both absolute cheat
broken
codes. You just run read option and give the ball to one of them the entire time, and you'll outscore your opponent. But in a watered-down Big 12, where it feels like a couple of teams are trying to regain their footing until a couple of teams are trying to make that first jump, I like the Jayhawks as well. Again, it's been forever since they've won more than 8 or 9 games, but there seems like everything is rising up, and I do apologize. I was showing you the wrong jersey. These are the new ones.
All
black with all just – instead of the gold, it's just straight white.
Okay, now that is a Dark Knight jersey.
Yes.
That is, okay, that's much better. It is pure black, black helmet, black jersey, black pants, white numbers and letters on front and back with the white stripe through the middle, but then a very thin gold trim around the numbers. Okay, that's a lot better.
Calling themselves Drip U.
Oh,
Drip
gosh.
University. And, you know, Gus Malzahn is known for his sweater vest drip. So I'm
sweater
sure that
vest
it just got
and visor combination,
over.
Man. It's undefeated. Undefeated. That is what the kids call drip nowadays.
It is that and then original bubble gum. It's all you need right there.
Those
a whole
are
pack
sweet,
of it.
Those jerseys, okay, that's a lot better and a lot more cool. That's
there
a lot cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot more cool.
You
that's
work
how
on
you
the
say
radio.
That. Yeah, grammar. Well, you know, with Kansas, though, it's funny because when you watched College Game Day this past week and all the guys were sitting on the desk, everybody's pick to come out of the Big 12 is Utah.
Yeah.
Everybody's picking Utah. But then the question becomes, okay, with this expanded college football playoff, right, how many teams does the Big 12 get in? And you could say the same or ask the same question with the ACC, two conferences that I feel like are going to be very overshadowed by the SEC and the Big Ten, and rightfully so, because those two conferences, SEC, Big Ten, are leaps and bounds better top to bottom than the other two. And so how many teams get in from those conferences? And you start talking about different records and things like that, and I want to give Nick Saban credit because he said this on game day, and I absolutely agree with him. He said, it's more than just your record. It's more than how many wins and how many losses. You have to take into consideration who you beat, who you lost to, where you were, and how it happened. You cannot just look at this through a vacuum and say, oh, 11-1 versus 10-2. Okay, you're in. You can't do that anymore because of how the playoff lays out and how different all of these conferences are.
Yeah, the group chat, all the boys, we were talking about that exact same thing last night and how you cannot have a generic set of rules and apply that to every single team regardless of the conference. Because, again, I feel like the national media or the national fans feel like there's an SEC bias or anything, but in reality, I think a 9-3 or a 10-2 SEC team could very well be in the first place in an ACC competition or a Big 12 or somebody like that. And so you have to find ways to take different viewings into each of those things. Because again, I mean, if Ole Miss goes 10-2 with a loss at LSU and to Georgia, but you're having the argument of them versus even the group of five team, which is say a Liberty goes 9-3, but they win the conference, they get the auto bid, but a team like Ole Miss wouldn't. So right. Many different conversations. It has to be more specific than, you went 11-1, this team went 10-2, you lost to a team that went 500. Yes, they lost two games to the teams in the top 10 that are already in the playoff, but resume shows that you had a better year.
Well, I think you have to divide this and separate this out a little bit, because you have to separate the conversation of automatic bids and everybody else, because those are two completely separate conversations. I don't care if you're 8-4. If you win your conference, you're in. You're automatically in.
Yeah.
And if you're a Power 4 team, you're a top 4 team. That's how that works. And then you still have, right, you still have a group of 5 that's going to get in. Like, you have all of those qualifications. You have to take that completely separate, and then everybody else you look at and start comparing resumes and you start doing things like that. I mean, you have to look at them separately.
It's, again, this is the first year, so nobody truly knows what is going to come out of it. That being said, at the end of the year, when I'll use Penn State as an example, say they go 10-2 with losses to Ohio State and a loss to Michigan. They don't play for the conference championship or anything like that. A 10-2 team that's going to be ranked, say, 9th or 10th in the final polls, they could possibly get jumped to a Liberty team who is ranked 24th, also went 10-2, but lost to New Hampshire, just, you know, for an example, a team that has zero competition comparing Ohio State and Michigan, but because of the quote-unquote auto bid, you now get in. And I don't think people are truly ready for that conversation, because not too many people think like that. But again, that's something that the two of us talk about each and every day, about how as good as the 12-team playoff is, they're going to realize that the auto bid scenario is very, very much controversial and up for discussion.
Yeah, they talked about that on game day too, where, just because you broke it down really well, just because you're ranked 9th doesn't mean you're going to be the 9th team in the playoff.
Yeah.
I mean, that team could be left out completely if things fall in a certain way. And I understand the automatic bid thing. I do. But it's going to be a very short-lived ruling, I think, and that may come to an end the day that the big teams leave the NCAA and the playoff and all that, and they do their own thing.
No, they're not doing that. We've talked about that. That's not going to happen.
Right. Well, I think that's when that would go to an end, where there are no conferences and have to show the love and be sure everybody's represented and make sure everybody's happy and make sure the liberties of the world are okay and the former Cincinnati's and things like that. I mean, at what point, and to go back to Nick Saban, he says this, it's about getting the best teams in, right? That's what he talks about, but that's where the argument always comes back to: best teams or most deserving teams. What's it about? But I always go to the fact of, okay, who determines the best teams? You play to determine that.
Yeah.
So you have, it's a combination, but where I'm going with this is with what you were talking about. Automatic bids, you're right. They're going to realize that's not the right way, I think.
It's definitely not. Even just a copy and paste from last year, Liberty would be the team that would make it to the playoff. They lost 45-6 in the Fiesta Bowl to Bo Nix in Oregon.
Yeah.
And again, if not saying that something like that is going to happen this year, but if it does, why would you not want to be the 5th seed in the playoff? Why would you not want that to be the team that you are going up against? Granted, you're expecting that group of 5 team to be the 12th seed in the playoff.
So many questions to be answered, and there's got to be so many reactions this year when the first few rankings start coming out and then the final rankings eventually come out and you do get that 12-team playoff. I mean, it's going to be chaos, and as everybody said, it still doesn't fix the problem of somebody's going to be left out.
Yeah.
There's somebody who's going to be upset. Sorry. Like, that's just how it goes.
And because nobody is used to the 12-team playoff, even just looking at Florida State, they now start 0-1 in ACC play. Think 12 weeks from now, when they're about to play possibly Clemson in the ACC championship, even if they lost that game, that's a 10-2 team who lost in week one to Georgia Tech. Now all of a sudden, oh, look, there they go, sliding into the 11th seed in the playoffs. It's just there's so many different things in college football, so many, I guess, different emotions that people are so quick to write off a team now because, oh, they lost and they didn't make the 14 playoff and then start 0-1. So many more things. It is going to be chaotic come week 13 and week 14 in the college football world.
I think it's a week-by-week thing, man, and we're all going to be along for the ride together. We'll see how it goes, but we do need to take our first break here in hour number two. 334-321-1390, that's the number to get you through to us. We'll talk a little Hugh Freeze from his press conference yesterday, talk about that, break it down, and dive into that depth chart a little bit more, what we could be seeing in week one and beyond. We'll have all that for you as we continue on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Rolling on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins. Christian Griffin with us in the studio as well. And want to break down Hugh Freeze's presser, really give you a chance, Christian, to kind of react to what he said yesterday. A lot of interesting quotes in there about the rotation on the offensive line and what we may see in week one in terms of all the depth chart. And then the thing that stood out to me between his press conference and even Tiger Talk last night, which you can hear weekly on Monday nights at 6 p.m. over on Wings 94.3, is Coach Hugh Freeze admitted. He said, look, everybody expects us as the head coach and the coaching staff in week one to just fully know and expect what our team's going to be. And he's right. Everybody does. And it's like, well, yeah, you're the head coach. Don't you know who your team is? And he said, no, we don't know because we haven't been on the field. We haven't played a real game. We haven't been tested other than ourselves and other than what, you know, pressure the coaches have put on these players in mock games and practices and scrimmages and things like that. He said, no, we're going to find out this Saturday and we're going to find out over the next couple of weeks, which is the conversation that we've all had on this station and across this town is the schedule allows you to do that, thankfully, whereas the Georgias of the world are playing Clemson and A&M playing Notre Dame. I mean, you're stressing a whole lot more if you're one of those coaches because nobody knows what their team's going to be. You have an idea, and you know what the talent is, but you don't know until they get on the field.
No, you really don't. It is. It's a really nice luxury to be able to have at least 1 week where you feel like, you don't want to say you feel like mistakes can be made, but you feel like you have a little bit of wiggle room. Looking at the depth chart, can we also talk how funny it was? I'm sure it was talked about yesterday, how defensive player was listed as a starter. And I love it because again, you have so
everybody's
many young guys.
Yep.
Every single person is going to, as you mentioned, they're going to be a possibility. And the depth chart is such a funny topic because, again, people are asking, I believe you call them purists. Is that where they fall under the word?
Depends on who you're talking about.
Well, just the people that ask Coach Freeze who is going to be the Z receiver. We need to know who the number one guy is. When in reality, looking at it right here, Perry Thompson is not listed as a starter. He's behind Keandre Lambert-Smith, but first off, it's a luxury to have for Auburn, but then in the world of college football where it's not those one guys, there is not a humongous drop-off in every single position from 1A to 1B. You can list guys as 1A and 1B, and even though Perry Thompson's not listed as the starting receiver, he could go out and lead the team in receptions. He can go out and lead the team in receiving yards and have two touchdowns. But again, since he wasn't a starter, I feel like it seems to flip everybody out.
Well, what I said yesterday was that's not even as much of a college football thing. That's an Auburn thing, because Auburn hasn't had that luxury for so long. Is in the past, and sure, way back when, too, it was, okay, he's your starting left tackle. All right, he's got to be it, because he's probably not going to lose that job. That's who they picked as the starter. He's presumed to be the best one in the room, so he has to work out. That's not the case anymore in college football, or for Auburn in particular. And that's what's really exciting about this is you're going to see so many different rotations and different guys at different positions through Alabama A&M, through California, if you do what you're supposed to do and that game becomes a runaway, against New Mexico, who knows what they're going to be when they get here, Arkansas maybe, and then you start to, hopefully, by that point, you have a pretty good idea of what you want to do, but also have a couple, tricks up your sleeve as well.
Well, and again, now with the redshirt rule, you have four games where you can play everybody. You don't necessarily have to sit there and go, we really like this guy, and we feel like he might be ready. And then all of a sudden, you take the risk of him stepping on the field week one and playing one snap, and you don't have the ability to go back now.
Yeah.
Same thing with we talked about the kicking units, where Alec McPherson is definitely coming back healthy. He's definitely not 100%, but they said he kicked last week and is a really big,
which is huge. Thank God.
Yeah, a very, very big improvement
just for him.
But where you're fully expecting before the season for McPherson to be that starting kicker, you can give Towns Magoo, give him four games to go out, give him more time to be healthy, and still redshirt him. And what a luxury that is, what a gift to be able to have, or to have a roster where it's not only the guy in bold that you have to expect everything from, because if he doesn't pan out, you have absolutely no idea what you're going to do.
Which was a legitimate fear for years and years and years in college football at Auburn. I mean, that was a legitimate thing, because there's more players now. A, there's just more players than ever before, but B, there's more talented players. Like, out of all those players, there's a higher percentage of them that could play right now or will have the ability to play compared to what it was in the past. And the redshirt thing is interesting, and obviously got to get to break. We could pick this up when we get back. But Hugh Freeze has made it very known. Like, yes, we're going to do what we can to respect a redshirt, but look, if I need you in a game five and it's your redshirt or help us out, get on the field. And Auburn, just to keep it vanilla here, Auburn's had problems with that in the past, and they've had players that have had issues with that as well. But Freeze admitted, like, I don't even know if redshirting's a thing anymore, and that's a whole another landscape and conversation about college football. We'll continue this when we come back, looking at the depth chart, looking ahead to week one for Auburn football, plus maybe some potential upsets in week one as well. We got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goetz with you. Come on in, be a part of the show, 334-321-1390. And we're going to keep talking a little Auburn, but got a text in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And first of all, it was a congratulations to you, Christian, and said a job well done on Lee Scott play-by-play on Friday night in Game 1.
Well,
so
thank you.
Congrats to you. And yes, great job, says. Tell Christian, great job on the play-by-play for LSA. How are my Warriors going to do against the new Lochipoca team in 2A football, since they're on the road at Lochipoca this Friday night?
I've talked with some of the coaches, and there really is. They're going in blind a little bit. Again, they did not play.
I feel like that's a theme all year.
Week one, and it is, especially up until you hit the middle point of the year where you've seen a couple games against similar competition, but especially against a team in 2A, you don't know too much about them to begin with, and much less that you have not seen them take the field, because once again, their game was canceled last Friday night. You expect, again, this is the biggest thing, you expect Lee Scott to go in there and do what they have done the past 2 years, and to do what they did this past Friday night. And it is You get guys out in space, and you get guys running up the middle. I mean, that's kind of been the offense lately, and then you throw the ball when it's needed because you have Reeves and you have Max Hammer, too, who also showed out a little bit on Friday night, has a lot of playmaking ability in the quarterback spot, has the arm strength as well, but Reeves does such a good job taking care of the offense. The definition of, and this is not a shot at all, but the definition of a game manager.
Absolutely.
Moves the team down the field.
He's been that way his whole career.
He really has. And again, that is not a shot at Pelzer at all. If anything, that is the highest compliment that I can give to somebody in high school football because, I mean, the first two drives of the game, a 36-yard touchdown drive and an 80-yard touchdown drive, all of a sudden you're halfway through the second quarter, you've had two possessions and you have two touchdowns. I mean, it's exactly what you expect. It was efficient. It looked fluid. It looked like a kid that had been running the offense for 3 or 4 years. And so more so not as much what you expect from Lochipoca. It's more so what you can expect from the Lee Scott Warriors.
And if I know Buster Daniel, head coach of Lee Scott, which I do, they're going to play very disciplined, very, very disciplined and just well-coached football, which they're going to take that into every game they play.
And that's exactly how it was. I mean, Excel had, I believe their running back was a Troy commit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, probably outweighed and outsized a majority of the Lee Scott defensive linemen. That's just how it was, but they kept him pursued. They kept him in his tracks. He only broke away for he had a 24-yard touchdown run at the end of the second quarter. And other than that, wasn't necessarily the star because, again, Coach Buster talked about it. Every team's going to have two or three guys that are bigger than us and more talented than us. But thankfully, it's 11-on-11. And that's simply what it comes down to.
There you go. Lee Scott on the road at Lochipoca Friday night. You're going to have your color commentator, so you will not be flying solo. Red will be joining you on the broadcast. So you guys will be on the air pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7. That is AU 100, 100.3, and AU100FM.com. That is from Eric in Auburn. He also asks us in college football. He says, need you guys to tell me the read on the USC-LSU matchup. That game is on Sunday night out in Las Vegas. And a game that I haven't talked a whole lot about, or we haven't talked a whole lot about, so why not? Let's dive into it a little bit. USC-LSU Sunday night in Las Vegas.
It's going to be, I believe, one of our pick'ems on Friday. I believe we're starting something to where not quite college game day-esque, but comparable to it, to where we have X amount of games, and we will pick a winner. We'll pick a winner and a cover each one, so we'll have two votes, I believe. We're still kind of formatting everything.
Well, what we'll probably do is use our own SEC football challenge contest that we have here
on
ESPN.
Okay.
And so wanted to – that's perfect radio.
I was about to say, I didn't know about that plug. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you bring that up because, yes, we've had a lot of questions about this, and this is perfect to bring this up. We've had a lot of questions about this, and here on ESPN 106.7, we do an SEC football challenge, and yes, it is back, and we want to make sure that everybody knows about it. Get in there, and it's between Wings 94.3 and ESPN 106.7. It's sponsored by the Orthopedic Clinic, Johnny Brusco's New York Style Pizza, and University Ace Hardware. So each and every week, you can go on our station website, ESPNAU.com, under the contest tab, and you'll see the SEC football challenge. And you go in there, and it's every SEC game. You go in there and just make your pick. Who's going to win? It's simple as that. And there's tiebreakers for scores and things like that. And so we will go through and pick most of those games. I mean, I'm not going to worry about a Missouri and Southeastern Missouri type of game, but yes, USC-LSU will be on there. And then we can add in some of our own games to our own type of pick 'em thing just for the show in particular. But be sure that you go and make your picks each and every week because we have weekly prizes for the SEC Football Challenge, and then we have a grand prize at the very end for the overall winner. We'll all be a part of it. We can't win. Sorry, Christian. But we'll be in there. You'll be able to see our rankings, and you'll be able to see me at the top each and every week. And then the second place person will get the weekly and in prizes, just how it goes. So
didn't you have Florida State covering too?
I don't think so.
Well,
Yeah, too bad this is, you know, that recorded was next week, and put right? on the next website. Yeah. Next week. Yeah, Florida State's going to cover week two. But yes, yeah, go and check it out. SEC Football Challenge on our station website at ESPNAU.com. But LSU and USC will 100% be in that and our pick'ems as well. And what a great game this is.
It is. There's a lot of question marks with both of these teams.
You better believe
new
it.
New quarterback spots, Nussmeier at the LSU spot, Miller Moss, which is one of the better quarterback names in college football, starting at USC. Lincoln Riley kind of on the hot seat following an 8-5 season with one of the best quarterbacks of recent times, and Caleb Williams only able to go 8-5. The offense was able to put up points, but the defense could not get a stop to save their life. It was what you would think of in the 2013-2014 Pac-12 late at night, where final score was 70-63, and USC with a new defensive coordinator, I believe it's De'Aton Lynn. I believe that they're co-coordinators, but he's going to be the primary guy controlling the defensive side of the football. I don't think that Southern California is ready for the physicality of LSU, and that is kind of the tale as old as time with the physicality of an SEC team versus a team that's out west. I think that, again, I think right now the line is
LSU 4.5.
I think it's up to 5.5 now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I would take that in a heartbeat. I like them a touchdown, if not more than that. And, again, you expect, unless there were some serious changes made, which Lincoln Riley said that there would be on that SoCal defense, it's kind of the same situation of how I said last week, DJ Uyunglele.
Wow.
There we go.
Wow.
But how, again, he has yet to do something to give me the full trust in him. And it goes back to the same thing with USC has yet to give me something defensively where I can trust them over an SEC offense.
Well, can't you say the same thing about LSU, who had a really good offense a year ago and historically one of the worst defenses in their program history? I mean, you're talking about an LSU team that a year ago gave up 45 points to Florida State in the opener. They let Arkansas score 31 points. That was in a win. They gave up 55 points to Ole Miss after scoring 49, and they still couldn't win that top 25 game. Gave up 39 to Missouri when they won at Missouri, but they scored 49 to make up for it. Of course, Auburn, you know, only scored 18. But they gave up 42 to Alabama, 35 to Florida, 30 to Texas A&M, 31 to Wisconsin in the bowl game. I mean, you're talking about a defense that was horrific for LSU a year ago. And our buddy Chris Gordy from Locked On SEC has been telling us that. It's like, look, Garrett Nussmeier is a trustworthy quarterback. Yeah. They've got to replace a lot of playmakers on the outside, does LSU. But all they got to do is be halfway decent on defense, and you're talking about a legitimate college football playoff team.
It's the article that I was reading, I was thinking more importantly than picking a winner, look at the over-under. But I believe this article had it completely wrong, and that was why it surprised me. This article said that the over-under was 50.5, and I was like,
hammer it!
Right. But then going to ESPN, seeing the over-under is 64.5.
That
makes it
better.
That's a two-touchdown swing right there.
I hope that article's out of date, man.
That's, I mean, if
I want their book.
I was going to say, if so, I'm going to their website and booking wherever I can because...
For entertainment purposes.
Yes, correct. But a Sunday night matchup where all of the eyes are going to be on you, 23rd ranked USC, 13th ranked LSU in Las Vegas.
Love it.
A neutral site. Both of those games, LSU 4.5, over under 64.5.
Which, I mean, take the rankings for what you will. You saw what happened with a top 10 team in week zero. I mean, rankings are, they're hit or miss. They're guesses right now. Let's just be honest. They're guesses.
They are.
On what you think this team or what a team is going to be. But I think LSU is a really good football team, and I would take them 4.5. I think they could probably win this thing by double digits if they tried hard enough. But I'm excited to see what it looks like. And, yeah, I love it being on that Sunday night with no NFL, right, because they don't start till the next week. And so you've got that one. You have Florida State back in action on Labor Day on Monday, which, by the way, just programming updates for those of you here on ESPN. No Max Roundtable. Doug will not be having a show, but we will here in Auburn. So On the Line and The Drive will have shows Monday on Labor Day. It's the Monday after week one of college football, and so we will be here in Auburn. Doug will be back on that Tuesday, so just keep that in mind for that. And, you know, you had wanted to make a pick or two, and we'll get back to this on Friday, too. But any upsets that you may see brewing early this week?
I was about to say the same thing. It looks like we're both unofficially picking LSU. I was going
to
ask
you. Yes, you have to wait till Friday.
But the first one that pops up to me is Alabama A&M and Auburn. I'm just kidding. the first one.
Shut your mouth.
The first one that pops up to me is... and I think Pat McAfee would agree with me. West Virginia hosting Penn State, the 8th-ranked Nittany Lions.
He picked West Virginia to go to the playoff.
And I don't hate it.
As a winner of the Big 12, by the way.
I do not hate it. Garrett Green, I think, is a very, very solid quarterback for the Mountaineers. It's an 11 a.m. kick. It is in Morgantown. It's one of those games to where, I mean,
it's a crazy place.
It feels like one of those. You talked about, I'm not necessarily picking it, but you mentioned the word brewing. It feels like that game, the time and the team and the place, it has all of the right linings for a possible college football upset in week one. Penn State's an 8.5-point favorite.
Okay.
And so more than that, I feel like I would take West Virginia plus 8.5 on that side of things, but
yeah, I see again, plus 8. I mean, either way,
but
yeah.
it lines up, and again, all of the stars have to line up for something like that to happen. But an early kick, a top 10 team going on the road to an unranked environment with a team that has a lot of expectations, a possible upset there in Morgantown.
Could definitely be a popular upset pick. Yeah. I think that's a very attractive one to pick, which a lot of times ends up not happening, which right. is, I mean, it's just how it goes, but you never know, right?
And again, with all of the question marks on Drew Aller, the Penn State quarterback, that's one of the biggest things too is underperformed a little bit last year. How much do you trust him in week one on the road? Do you give him the ropes or do you kind of play back and try and win one of those low scoring battles?
I think another very, very popular upset pick is Clemson over Georgia.
Yeah.
Especially with Georgia being a 13.5-point favorite. You get almost 2 touchdowns there. You get double digits. T-Bone is all over Clemson right now and possibly taking down the Dogs in week one. What an upset that would be.
Well, I saw something that said that Clemson is like, if you power rank all of their players or whatever, they're like the third or the fifth most talented lineup in college football, which is a crazy stat considering Dabo uses 0% of the transfer portal. But you've even heard the Clemson guys talking about it. He was like, the number one standing by Georgia doesn't intimidate us at all, and everybody there in Clemson, South Carolina has the mindset of, hey, if we have what we're expecting to do later on in the season, it's going to start week one in Atlanta, which is a place that Georgia expects to play at the end of the year. So what a weird bookend that could be with hosting both games inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. You want to give Georgia the home crowd favorite, but Clemson's not much further than Athens is.
And they'll travel well.
And they very much will. It's going to be, and that's an 11 a.m. kick as well. So it's going to be whichever team can wake up, get off the bus, hopefully have a good breakfast, and try and take down the other.
A game that will be happening the exact same time the Auburn-Alabama A&M game will be is number 7 Notre Dame on the road at Kyle Field taking on number 20 Texas A&M. Rankings-wise, yes, A&M winning that game would be an upset, but the folks out in Las Vegas see it otherwise. A&M favored in this game. Yes, it's at home. Yes, it's a night game. And yes, I have no trust in Notre Dame, but I don't know. See, so, as Uncle T-Bone would say, something smells a little off on this one. I don't know. It's starting to smell not quite like cologne just yet, but we're getting there for me. I don't know what to think because I have no trust in Notre Dame, and I don't know anything about what A&M's going to be. I've made that very clear. I know their team and their roster, but I'm not putting anything into them because I just don't know.
Yeah, Elko, first year at the helm at Texas A&M. There's so many question marks, which, again, I say so many question marks. You can say that just about every single team, but in a matchup like this. But Seamus on College Game Day was the only one to pick Georgia Tech, and he picked Notre Dame to win the national championship, and he was the only one right on Florida State, Georgia Tech. So maybe he knows something that we don't.
I mean, yeah, they do it differently over across the pond, so maybe we just go with what Seamus thinks.
They definitely do. A&M is a 3-point favorite right now, which, again, you can usually put 3 to 4 points on a home field advantage. So they are just about saying that this game is
almost
as notched as you could possibly imagine.
Mm. Well, we'll have some picks for you coming up on Friday's show. We'll do all of our pick'ems each and every Friday. But again, be sure you go and get signed up right now. Don't do anything else. Go to ESPNAU.com. Get in on our SEC Football Challenge. It's brought to you by our two stations, Wings 94.3 and right here on ESPN 106.7, presented by the Orthopedic Clinic, Johnny Brusco's New York Style Pizza, and University Ace Hardware. Weekly prizes and then the grand prize at the end of the season. All right, we'll get to our final break. Come back, wrap it up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at espnau.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Been a great show today. Had a lot to go over, and we got to most of it. We never get to everything, but we covered a lot of ground on the show today. We had our baseball power hour back in the first hour with Lindsey Crosby. We talked about the Atlanta Braves, the standings so far, getting you set for their series against the Phillies this weekend, where same situation as last weekend. It's pretty much got to win. Got to get some wins. Got to make up some ground. It's go time for the Atlanta Braves, and we will have the Saturday game on Saturday night right here on ESPN, so be sure that you tune in for that. So that was in the first hour, had Major League Baseball storylines, all that good stuff. Here in hour number two, it's kind of been wide open. We've had phone calls and text messages and different conversations about the depth chart for Auburn and starting to look ahead to week one a little bit of college football. And it's been great. So if you missed any of it, you can go and catch it with the podcast at ESPNAU.com. Appreciate you all being here. As always, man, we are getting into the best time of the year. And so I'm looking ahead to what the rest of the week holds. Tomorrow is Wednesday, so we will get Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 on the show for the first game week of the season. So we'll get his thoughts on everything, especially with Georgia opening up with Clemson, man. Going to be a lot of fun. We'll see and get the latest updates on the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll also, tomorrow's Wednesday, so Double D, Daryl Dapperts will be with us in hour number two. Thursday, it's a busy one. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, Coach Keith Etheridge from Auburn High School Football, and then Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. Then it's Free For All Friday. Me, Christian, you'll be back with me on Friday, and then Uncle T-Bone is in here on Fridays as well. We're picking all the biggest games in week one, and then full breakdown of Auburn and Alabama A&M.
What a great Friday slate. It's going to be that Free For All Friday going to be a little bit chaotic, but
yeah, we got to get high school football in there too.
And that is, oh man, what a great problem it is that I won't be talking with you again until after the Thursday week one games. We will have games to talk about on Friday.
You're right. Wow. We will. How about that?
What a great problem to have in the world. Yeah. We have made it to college football.
Ugh. Can't wait, man. It's going to be a great week. So be sure that this is where you are between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. ESPN 106.7 and ESPNAU.com. There's nowhere else to be. 7 straight hours of local sports talk radio. Ooh. From the Max Roundtable, On the Line, and The Drive. It doesn't get any better. And so, again, tomorrow is Jordan Hill and Double D. Thursdays are just insane around here, but we try to get as many guests and as much content to you as possible. And then, yeah, Friday we'll get some high school football conversation in there. Again, Lee Scott on the road at Lochapoca, Auburn High hosting Vestavia Hills at the Duck. And so a lot to get to on that as well. And then don't forget Saturday with kickoff of Auburn football on Wings 94.3. Kickoff at 6:30. Auburn Sports Network's coverage starts at 3:30. Game day on Wings with Uncle T-Bone and Jumpin' Jack Hutton will begin at 1:30. So 5 hours of coverage before Auburn even kicks off on the radio. Tell you what, man, that's a lot of talk on football on Saturday.
That's all you can ask for. I jumped the gun a little bit last Friday. I was too excited. I had the game day on Wings ad all ready to be read and everything, and I was sitting there next Saturday. Actually, the following Saturday, just whoops. Too excited for college football, man.
Hey, that's okay, man. That's okay. You're allowed to be excited now because it's here. Week one is here. So, again, stacked week the rest of the way. If you missed any of today's show, check it out, ESPNAU.com. Christian, always appreciate your time, my man. I'll see you on Friday.
Yes, sir. War Eagle and go Warriors, baby.
There you go. Christian Griffin, he'll be back with us on Friday, as will Uncle T-Bone. But I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. So until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.